תפילת החברים.
The prayer of the friends. Great Creator, Almighty and Merciful, we thank you for connecting us on this path, for the opportunity to help and love each other in order to fulfill your will. Give us the privilege of being on a path with joy and do this work for your glory alone.
Rabash article, What is His Guidance is Concealed and Revealed.
במדרש רבה רות
In Midrash Rabbah, Rut, one verse says, For the Lord will not abandon His people and will not leave His inheritance. And another verse says, For the Lord will not abandon His people for the sake of His great name. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani said, At times, He does for the sake of His people and His inheritance. And at times, He does for the sake of His great name. Rabbi Ibi said, When Israel are worthy for the sake of His people and His inheritance, and when Israel are not worthy for the sake of His great name, and our sages said, In the land of Israel, for the sake of His people and inheritance. Abroad, for the sake of His great name, as was said, for my sake I will do. We should understand the meaning of His great name and the meaning of His people and His inheritance. We should also understand the difference between abroad, attributed to His great name, and the land of Israel, which is for the sake of His people and inheritance. We are told to believe in His guidance, that He leads the world as good and doing good. This is the matter that we must believe, that the purpose of creation was because He desires to do good to His creations. And we must believe that even though we suffer from what Providence sends us to feel, but nonetheless, we should believe that the punishments we suffer for not observing the mitzvot, the commandments of the Creator, which the Creator has commanded us, these punishments are not due to vengeance, as it occurs among the flesh and blood, who punish because their honor was tarnished when their orders are disobeyed. Instead, here there is a matter of correction.
פירוש שהייסורים מה שאדם
מקבל the torments a person suffers for not observing the Creator's commandments is because the giving of Torah and mitzvot was for man's sake
שעל ידם הוא יקבל
through them he is to receive kelim vessels they can receive the delight and pleasure that the Creator has prepared for the created beings. For this reason, when a person does not observe Torah and mitzvot, he is devoid of those kelim. Hence, the Creator sends him suffering, so he would take upon himself the Torah and mitzvot. It is as Bala Sulam said, that we must believe that the sin is the punishment and the punishment is the correction. This is the opposite of the common view. It is as the Rambam says. Rambam had already explained to us the matter of his uniqueness, as expressed in the words, one unique and unified. There is a difference between one, unique, and unified. When he unites to act with one force, he is called unified. And when he divides to act his act, each part of him is called unique. And when he is in a single evenness, he is called one. Interpretation. Uniting to act with one force, meaning when he works to bestow, as is fitting of his oneness, and his operations are unchanging. And when he divides to act his act, meaning when his operations differ, and he seems to be doing good and bad, then he is called unique, since all his different operations, different acts, have a single outcome, doing good. We find that he is unique in every single act and does not change by his various actions. And when he is in a single evenness, he is called one. That one points to his essence. He also writes there, one indicates a single evenness. Unique implies that all those multiplicities are in him, as single as his essence. And unified shows that although he performs many actions, but one force performs all, and they all return and unite in the form of unique. We see that all of guidance is in the form of corrections. That although it is difficult to understand this, we must take upon ourselves faith in the sages, which is called the oral Torah, law. That is, we must believe what they are telling us about what to do and what to believe, and we must follow their views blindly, without criticism. Because our reason cannot understand the ways of His providence. Thus, everything must be in faith above reason. And specifically by this, we are then rewarded with a delight and pleasure, since we are following the ways of the sages who have determined for us in which way and manner to go, and not according to the way our intellect understands, and specifically in this way of above reason. We are later rewarded with feeling in the organs that the Creator leads the world in a manner of good and doing good. At that time, we do not have to believe, because we can already feel this. And then we ourselves testify that the creation of the world was with the intention to do good to His created beings. We must believe that the Creator leads the world as Elohim, God, which is called Teva, nature, as it is written, the gematria of nature is God. The gematria of Teva is Elohim, which is the quality of judgment. God is the quality of judgment, and Havaya, the Lord, is the quality of mercy. Hence, for the world in general, who do not believe in the Creator, they say that the guidance of the world follows the quality of nature. That nature determines the guidance of the world. However, they do not say that nature is God, but that it is nature without any leader. We see that this nature, which the Creator created with the quality of judgment, has no mercy in the judgment, since nature has no intellect from which to ask for mercy, so it does not punish us so harshly, because we are so weak that we cannot follow its commandments. The answer to this is, there is no mercy in the judgment. For example, if someone throws his friend in the water, and the water wants to drown him, he says to the water, "Is it my fault that my friend threw me into your domain? Therefore, I'm asking you to please have mercy on me. Since I have a big family with many children and no one to take care of them, so please forgive me for entering your domain." The answer is, there is no mercy in the judgment to those who break nature's laws, which is God, who is the quality of judgment. This is as it is written, judgment will puncture the mountain. Justice should be done at all costs. Only those who believe that nature is God, meaning that there is a leader to nature, then through prayer, they can induce change in nature, since there is a landlord to nature, and therefore he can change nature. It is written that when Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa saw on the eve of Shabbat that his daughter was sad, he told her, "My daughter, why are you sad?" She said to him, "I swapped the jar of oil with the jar of vinegar, and I placed the vinegar in the candle. The candle will quench, and it will be dark on Shabbat." He replied, "He who said to the oil, 'Burn,' will tell the vinegar, 'Burn.'" We see, the one who believes that nature has a landlord can change nature. For this reason, those righteous for whom nature is regarded as God, meaning that the Creator is nature's landlord, then through their prayer, the Creator changes nature because of them. This is why we pray to the Creator to help us change nature. Meaning that even if, as far as nature is concerned, all the doctors have given up on that person, and medicine gives him no chance of recovery, still, the Creator can still heal and change nature. It is written, even if a sharp sword is placed on his neck, he should not deny himself mercy. That although from the perspective of nature, there is a judgment that he will certainly die, still, a Jew believes that there is a leader to nature and that he has mercy, which is called Havaya. Therefore, they said, he should not deny himself mercy. This is the meaning of the words, Havaya is Elohim, the Lord is God. Conversely, those who say that nature is without a landlord, and there is no one to lead it, have no mercy in the judgment by them. Therefore, they have no complaints to nature, because there is no one to be angry with, since it has no mind that you can speak to or ask for mercy. This is similar to an old custom. Before the invention of road signs as a means to put order in traffic, police officers would stand and streamline traffic. And at that time, many people were angry and had grievances against the officers for not doing their job right, and they were not noticing the line of cars. And sometimes a person would approach the officer and ask for a favor, since he has a sick person at home, etc., or asks for some special treatment, and the officer would act on according to his own judgment. At that time, everyone thought that the officers were not working properly. Many people were happy, and many were not. But rather today, the streamliner of traffic has become inanimate, mindless. So now, each one accepts the verdict of the road sign, the traffic light, and no one gets angry with it or asks it for favors. For example, sometimes an ambulance drives with a sick person that must be rushed to the hospital on a life or death situation. He does not speak to the road sign, which is similar to nature, streamlining the conduct of creation to let him through, since it is similar to nature, which is judgment, and there is no mercy in judgment. Accordingly, we could understand that when the Creator wanted the physical world to exist and for the species to continue, and that generations will continue in succession, and man will not be able to spoil the order of the existence of the world, for this reason, He has created the world as nature. And since it is not revealed as orderly guidance, and everyone thinks that there is no landlord to the world, and that man can do whatever he wants, since when they do not know that there is a landlord watching over the world, then each one does as he pleases, and they might spoil the world. So what did he do? He revealed the reward and punishment. That is, anyone who wants to break nature's laws, what he did, will immediately be punished. And if they observe nature's laws, they will be rewarded for their work. This is called revealed reward and punishment. For this reason, in the physical world, because of the correction called equivalence of form, it is forbidden to receive for one's own sake. Rather, as it is written, all your actions will be for the sake of heaven. Since the greatest pleasure is when a person feels that he is standing in the king's palace and speaking with the king, and since any reception of pleasure must be for the sake of the Creator and not for one's own sake, it means that a person should aim while receiving the pleasure to receive because the Creator wants to create the created beings to enjoy. But he for himself, he would relinquish the pleasure. It is known that the greater the pleasure, the harder it is to relinquish it. For this reason, if the Creator were revealed and they would not have to believe in Him, it would be impossible for man to be able to aim in order to bestow, since a person is utterly unable to say that if the Creator did not want us near Him, and to feel how we speak to Him, we would relinquish the pleasure of this meeting. Hence, a concealment was made, so there would be no room for choice. That is, we must believe that the whole earth is full of His glory. And before a person is rewarded with vessels of bestowal, the person cannot have permanent faith. As it is said in the introduction of the Book of Zohar, for this reason, there is a tzimtzum, restriction, and concealment on spirituality. And in order not to have corruption in the world, the reward and punishment are revealed. Conversely, if the reward and punishment in spirituality were revealed, there would not be any need to observe Torah and Mitzvot for the sake of the Creator. Instead, the reason mandating observing Torah and Mitzvot would remain in Lo Lishma, not for her sake. That is, where there are revealed reward and punishment, which is called open providence, there is no need to observe Torah and Mitzvot because the Creator has commanded us to do so. And we would want to do His will, and not because of reward and punishment. Since we must observe Torah and Mitzvot, because He is great and ruling. Thus, it is a great privilege if we can do His will and observe His commandments. But if the reward and punishment were revealed, it would not matter to us who gives us the reward and punishment. It follows that if this were so, man would have no choice as to whether to achieve dvikut, adhesion, with the Creator, since he would have no need for this, because the reward and punishment would instruct man to keep the rules. Because the reward and punishment are discerned as man's two legs, by which he walks and advances towards the goal to which his legs lead him. Since from a place where he feels suffering, which is a punishment, he runs, he escapes. And to a place where he feels he can derive delight and pleasure, there he runs. Naturally, at that time, he has no need to know who is the landlord of the world, for what will add to him to know that there is a leader to the world? He would only be interested in scrutinies of pleasure and suffering, and where one can derive more pleasure, in this he is immersed. And all his calculations in life are only about these matters. For this reason, the Creator hid himself in the Torah, meaning that by engaging in Torah, he can find him, for otherwise, he is hidden.
לכלל העולם שאין להם שייכות לרוחניות,
it follows that to the entire world who have no connection to spirituality, and he is hidden from them, he must lead the world with open providence, meaning that the reward and punishment will be revealed. Naturally, they will not spoil the conducts of creation, for the Creator has created the world in nature. And they say that there is no landlord here, but only nature, which is seemingly inanimate and is the leader of the world. And when there is no landlord to fear, each does as he pleases, and they might spoil creation. But because the Creator leads the whole world in open providence, naturally, they will observe every condition that nature stipulates, or otherwise nature will punish them. It follows that he can be hidden and everyone do his will, as he has arranged the world by nature, which is called God, the quality of judgment. It follows that he is hidden and the reward and punishment are revealed. But this is not so in spirituality, where he wants to be revealed to the lower ones. At that time, providence is covered, meaning that the reward and punishment are not revealed. Instead, one must believe that there are reward and punishment. And why are the reward and punishment concealed? It is because he wants them to search him, search for him, meaning that the quality of great and ruling will compel them to engage in Torah and mitzvot, and not the reward, but rather that everything will be lishma, for her sake. Namely, that the Creator is the reason for engaging in Torah and mitzvot, because this is His will. Conversely, if we feel reward and punishment while observing the mitzvot, the commandments, this is called lo lishma, as written, crave His commandments. They interpreted His commandments, and not the reward for His commandments, but rather to observe because the Creator has commanded to do, and the person wants to bring contentment to the Creator. And this is why he observes His commandments. It is as the Radak says there, crave His commandments, is the positive mitzvot, commandments. He does them willingly, out of love for the Creator, who commanded him to do them. For this reason, he says, crave, meaning that he chases the mitzvah and exerts to do it with all his might, with his body and his wealth. Accordingly, where we want the Creator Himself to be revealed to a person in the form of dvekut, adhesion, the reward and punishment are in concealed guidance. Otherwise, he will have no need to connect to Him. Instead, they would observe Torah and mitzvot because of their own benefit. And from this, they will derive satisfaction in their lives. But rather, where it is impossible that they would be interested to know if there is a leader or not, which means that the world is governed only by corporeal things, it follows that the Creator is concealed there because they have no need to know if there is a landlord and a leader to the world. And instead, they say that the leader is nature, as though it's inanimate. And what did the Creator do in order not to spoil nature's order? He placed a correction on nature. And that correction is called revealed reward and punishment. That this is a strict guarding, that they will not spoil the nature that the Creator has created. For this reason, we should say that where the Creator remains concealed, there the reward and punishment are revealed. Where the Creator must be felt among the lower ones, then the reward and punishment must be concealed from the lower ones. Now we can interpret what we asked. What does it mean that they said about the verse, for the Lord will not abandon His people, for two reasons. One, for the sake of His people and His inheritance. And two, for the sake of His great name. We asked, what is the difference between them? Our sages said about the verse, for my sake I will do. Rabbi Alexandri said, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Rami said, it is written in its time, and it is written, I will hasten it. If they are rewarded, I will hasten it. If they are not rewarded, in its time, in due time. We should interpret the meaning of, I will hasten it. We learn that the created beings must come to be rewarded with the purpose of creation, which is to do good to His created beings. And all of our work is to correct ourselves with vessels of bestowal. For only in those kelim can the upper lights clothe, so there will be equivalence of form between the light and the kli. That this is the correction of the tzimtzum, the restriction, in order not to have the bread of shame. It follows that it is within man's power to correct this. This is called accelerating the achieving of the goal, which is to do good to His created beings. And we can do this only by annulling the authority. And only then is it possible to receive everything in order to bestow. For this reason, when the Creator imparts the abundance, He imparts to His people and His inheritance. That is, that everything is regarded as His, and the lower one has no authority of his own, because he has annulled his own authority. For this reason, he will not abandon, but He rather bestows upon His people and His inheritance. But if they are not rewarded, meaning that they do not want to annul their authority and are unworthy of receiving the abundance, this is called in its time, in due time. At that time, the Creator works for the sake of His great name. And the name of the Creator is the Good Who Does Good. For this reason, He bestows upon them because He is good and does good, which is called His great name. This is the meaning of what is written. Our great sages say, in the land of Israel, for the sake of His people and His inheritance, abroad, for the sake of His great name. And what is the relation in the work between the land of Israel and His people and His inheritance? In the work, the land of Israel is when a person has already been rewarded with all his actions being yeshar kel, straight to the Creator, and he does not do anything for his own sake. It follows that the Lord will not abandon. Instead, He bestows upon them delight and pleasure, because they have vessels of bestowal, and thus they are called His people and His inheritance, since they have no authority of their own. Conversely, abroad, while they are still not in the land of Israel, when their actions are still not for the sake of the Creator, called Yeshar Kel, it is only by an awakening from above, regarded as on the part of the Upper One, whose purpose is His will to do good to His creations. And this is called in due time, and it is called for the sake of His great name, where His great name is the name of the Creator, which is the Good Who Does Good. Also, great means chesed, mercy, meaning that His manner is to bestow. For this reason, the Lord will not abandon only from the perspective of the awakening from above, Since from the perspective of the lower ones, they are still not worthy of the Creator bestowing upon them delight and pleasure. It therefore follows that in all the descents that a person suffers in the work, he must believe in reward and punishment. That although he does not see it, instead, he must believe that the Creator will not leave him, even when he is in a descent. Although it is a punishment when the Creator removes him from the work, since the fact that he feels no flavor in the work is only because the Creator has thrown him out. So, in order that a person will not think that now he does not want to be a worker of the Creator, but it is the Creator who does not want him. And he must believe that this is a punishment. But he must also believe that it is not out of vengeance, but that this is corrections, but that it is corrections by which he will be rewarded with ascending and achieving the desired goal.
Very important article. Very deep, profound. I don't know what to tell you. Do you want to read it again?
This
what I feel from many friends. Who's in favor? So many. Well, you'll have to do some work here. What is annulling the authority?
The annulment of the authority? It's also, as we understand in this world, the annulment of control.
Control.
Man's control. That beforehand he thought that he is in control of the world, or at least parts of the world. And now he understands that he has no control, and it's correct and good, and he is happy of it, and he accepts the annulment of his authority completely, let's say.
What for?
In order in this to give room to the Creator to control his world. Chaim.
He writes that to work because he is great and ruling is called Lishma.
Right.
Why is it Lishma? It sounds egoistic because he is great and ruling, so I annul myself before him naturally.
Why is it not good that I annul?
It's
the nature of the small one to annul before the great one. Why should he leave his nature? Why is it called Lishma?
But if I reach a state that I reveal that he is the good, that does good, controls everything, there is nothing else besides him, and then I am annulled.
Right, because he's great and ruling, and I want to serve him, so that he will serve me. Just like a baby annuls before the mother, naturally, because she serves him. And she is the great one, and she is the ruler. It's the same. Why is that Lishma?
Lishma, for her sake, because in this he feels the desire of the Creator, and he decides to annul towards him.
Where here is my overcoming?
Inside.
But why?
Inside this, that you decide that this is what you'd want to have.
If I already discover what is the force that rules reality, it's better for me to annul myself before this force that is ruling reality.
Correct.
Why is this coming out of...
By what do you reveal this? By this, that he is great and ruling.
So
let me ask differently. Is it possible to discover that he's great and ruling before we come out of our nature?
You want that to be so.
I want it, but I mean, in order to discover that he's great and ruling, do you first have to be in Lishma? Do you first have to rise above reason?
Yes.
And when you discover that he's great and ruling?
Yes.
Okay, so it turns out that the revelation that he's great and ruling is like a testimony, it's like evidence that you are in Lishma.
Yes.
Okay.
We have understood one another.
What's the difference between the way we think about godliness as reward and punishment compared to how we see it in the wisdom of Kabbalah? What's the difference?
The difference is that there are no punishments in the world, but only the Creator guiding us toward eternity each time, toward the complete thing, a whole thing.
I wanted to ask, he writes that if the Creator would be revealed, we wouldn't need to believe in Him, and there wouldn't be any reality that a person could aim in order to bestow. So it turns out that for them to be vessels of bestowal in reality always has to be concealed.
To the extent that he's concealed, there's the ability to develop vessels of bestowal.
So he's never revealed.
He's not revealed. Rather, you discover vessels of bestowal.
So what's revelation of the Creator if He never reveals Himself?
You are building the Creator. Come and see. You have made me, and so on and so forth, as it's written.
No.
Why is it like that? Then what is revelation of the Creator? If you build Him,
the revelation of the Creator to the created being means that the created being, specifically out of all the concealments, is building the Creator.
Why does revelation of the Creator annul the ability to have vessels of bestowal in reality?
Because, well, it's not precisely this way, but the revelation of the Creator gives the created being, allows the created being to be on the level of the Creator.
So why does it affect the vessels?
With which vessels the created being is in?
So I'll ask the question again. He writes, if the Creator is revealed, so there's no reality that a person can be in order to bestow. So it turns out that he'll never be revealed.
Yes.
So that's my question. Why, if the Creator is revealed, there's no ability to be in order to bestow?
You come to the form of bestowal, because you are making it, you're building it, doing it, you're arranging it.
So you're doing it. And where is the Creator if you're doing it?
You have made Him.
And that's called the Creator, what you do?
Yes.
I also
don't understand why in a place where the Creator remains concealed, that's where the reward and punishment is revealed. And in a place where the Creator should be felt in the lower ones, then the reward and punishment has to be concealed from the lower ones.
To allow for free choice.
What is revelation of the Creator or revelation of His reward and punishment?
You need to think about it. Those are beautiful questions. What will I do with all those questions? I don't want to answer them. I want you to discuss them, to stew in them. When I give an answer, the answer blocks the question, and that's it. There's no more development.
No,
all those questions, it's good if you go, walk with them and think about them.
Да, дорогой Раф, тут вот интересно, Рабаш пишет о том, как меняется природа.
Rabash writes in an interesting way how nature changes. And thanks to our prayer, it can change because there is a landlord.
Каббалиста, и насколько она действительно может повлиять на природу?
How much force does the prayer have by a Kabbalist that can really change the laws of nature?
Они люди мазе естественный ход событий. Это
I don't know this word that he said in Russian. It's a lie that's accepted in this world that if we do nothing, then there's a process by which nature develops. Of course, that's how it works, but this is the path of suffering. And there's nothing original or natural about it. We have to understand that in nature there's no path of development. Rather, everything that happens, happens around us. It's all happening around us. All the galaxies that you wish to see, if you want to see changes and developments in stars and planets, and certainly in human society on this planet, all of it are results, reactions to our behavior.
Our behavior.
There's a concrete example here where he writes about the vinegar and the oil, that she added vinegar, and the father said, whoever told the oil to burn, he should tell the vinegar to burn. So how much can a prayer really change something like that?
It's possible that the laws of nature can change, contrary to what we discovered earlier. Yes.
Какой должна быть молитва? Тут же про молитву идет речь. Какой должна быть молитва?
What should the prayer be? We're speaking about a prayer here.
Чтобы она была в правильном направлении.
How can it be that strong that it'll be aimed correctly?
The prayer has to be such that it emerges from the connection between us, and it has to be against corporeal laws of nature. It has to be corrected using the spiritual laws of nature, and because we want it to happen. You don't actually make any changes in nature. You simply raise the degree of existence to a higher level. And then there are no miracles here.
פשוט מאוד.
It's very simple.
תנסו ותראו.
Try and you will see.
Aldığım hazım yaratan için mi ya da benim için olduğunun erdemliğine nasıl geleceğim? Ve buradaki bu iki hazın bir...
How can we attain the ability to discern whether we're getting pleasure from the Creator for His pleasure or for our pleasure, and what separates the two forms of reception of pleasure in that way?
The main thing is through the society. If I connect with the society and I turn to the Creator, then my path, the step I take is correct.
Book, because there are a few versions. So it's on our website, explanation of the article, preface to the wisdom of Kabbalah. Four phases of direct light. The learning begins with the Bchina, the sermon, called the connection between the Creator and the created beings. Since we do not speak of the Creator Himself, and we cannot attain Him, instead, by your actions, we know you. Meaning, all the attainment is only in the operations that extend from Him. This connection is also called the purpose of creation. Our sages attained that His desire and the goal are to do good to His creations. Hence, the order of evolution begins from this discernment until it reaches the souls whose root is the soul of Adam HaRishon, which extends from the internality of the worlds of Bia. Allegorically speaking, when he wished to benefit his creatures, he wanted to give them 100 kilograms of pleasure. Hence, he had to create such creations that would want to receive it. We learned that the desire to receive delight and pleasure is the very essence of the created being, and after whom creation is called existence from absence. He created it, so his thought of delighting his creations would be realized. For the will to receive to be born, there had to be an order of development by four discernments. Since one can enjoy something only according to one's yearning for it, this is why we call the Kli vessel by the name will to receive, or yearning. That is, according to the measure of the need, so is the measure of the yearning to satisfy the need. There are two conditions for making the yearning. One should know what to yearn for. One cannot yearn for something of which one has never seen or heard.
Two,
one will not have the yearned for thing, since if he has already obtained his wish, he loses his yearning. To meet these two conditions, four pchinot, phases, or discernments, emerged in the will to receive, and along with their root, they are five pchinot. The fifth pchina, or phase, is called a kli that is suitable for reception of delight and pleasure. This is their order. One, ketel, his desire to do good to his creation. Two, chokhmah, his desire to do good to his creations created a deficiency, existence from absence, and along with it created the light. Thus, the abundance and the desire to receive the abundance came together. This is so because the desire still did not know what to want. Hence, it was born along with the filling. However, if it has its filling, it does not have the desire for the filling, as written concerning the second condition. This prina is called prina aleph, the first discernment of youth, coarseness or thickness. Three, bina. Since the light comes from the giver, the force of bestowal is included in this light. Hence, at its end, chokhmah wants equivalence of form, meaning not to be a receiver but a giver. There is a rule in spirituality. Any generation of a new form is considered a new discernment. Hence, this discernment is given its own name, bina. And this bchina bet, the second discernment or second phase of coarseness. We also learn that the light that spreads while the lower one wants equivalence of form is all chasadim, light of mercy. And this is the light that shines in bina. Should I keep going?
Shela.
Yes, Oran.
Yes, Oran.
It's written in Bina, since the light comes from the bestower, in that light the force of bestowal is incorporated. What is that? The light that comes from the Creator, from the beginning, when it came out of the bestower, out of the Creator, it contains the power of the Creator that He wants to bestow. The force of bestowal, the nature of bestowal exists in this light. And what does it do in the receiver?
That's what He wants to explain to us. So
the light comes, fills the will to receive that it created, and then...
And then because it came from the bestower, it delivers to the vessel its nature.
And what does the vessel feel?
That it comes from the bestower. That the light comes from the bestower that fills him.
Fill it in what?
With some kind of pleasure. But the nature of the pleasure, the root of the pleasure, is the bestower.
Also fills it with the force of bestowal?
Yes. Okay, let's go.
Question.
If Bina yearns to bestow, why is she called Aviut Bet, the second degree of coarseness? On the contrary, she should have been finer than Bchina Aleph, the Aviut, the first degree of coarseness.
Next.
Answer. I explained it with an allegory. A person gives his friend a gift, and the friend receives it. Afterward, he reconsiders and decides that it is not in his interest to receive, and returns the gift. In the beginning, he was under the influence and domination of the giver.
Hence, he received. But once he received, he felt that he was the receiver, and that sensation caused him to return the gift. Lesson. In first phase, B'china Aleph, he received due to the domination of the giver. But he still did not feel like a receiver. And when he saw and felt that he was a receiver, he stopped receiving. And this is B'china Bet, the second discernment. Phase 2. In other words, in that state, he felt that he was the receiver and hence wanted to bestow upon the giver. And this is why B'china Bet, phase 2, is called Bina. For she examined, she observed that she is a receiver and therefore wanted to bestow. This is also why we learn that the beginning of the learning is from Bina down.
That's clear, right? After he feels that he's receiving from the bestower, so he himself makes a calculation and also wants to bestow. The first phase is the receiver. The second phase wants to bestow.
Dalek,
keep going.
Zeranpin.
4. Zeranpin. At its end, Bina received as a kind of drive which stems from the purpose of creation that she must receive. Since the purpose of creation was not for the creatures to engage in bestowal. On the other hand, she also wanted equivalence of form, bestowal. Therefore, she compromised. She would receive chasadim, mercy, and the illumination of the light of chokhmah, light of wisdom. And this is called b'china gimel, the aviyut, the third phase of coarseness. Since she already extends chokhmah, but there are still chasadim in her. This is the reason for the name Zeir Anpin, small face. Chochmah is called Panim, face, as in a man's wisdom illuminates his face, but it receives this light of Chochmah in Zeir, meaning a very small extent. But this discernment is still not considered a vessel. Since if it can bestow and receive only an illumination of the light of chokhmah, it is a sign that its craving to receive is incomplete, since it still has the strength to engage in bestowal too.
Ken.
Hey.
Yeah.
Malchut.
5. Malchut. At its end, B'china Gimel is prompted from above to receive abundantly because of his desire to do good to his creations. After all, the purpose of creation was not for the lower ones to receive in Zeranpin. Hence, this awakening causes Malchut to have a desire and craving to receive the light of Chochmah, as it's shown in B'china Aleph in phase 1, when she had all of the light of Chochmah. But the difference between B'china Aleph and B'china Dalet, between phase 1 and phase 4, is that in phase 1, it could not be said that she enjoyed the light of Chochmah, since she still did not have the yearning and deficiency, since the abundance and the vessel came together. But phase 4 yearns for the light of Chochmah, while she does not have it. Hence, when she receives, she feels the delight and pleasure that come with satisfying her deficiency. And only this phase is called a vessel, since it wants only to receive. Whereas all the other discernments or phases or b'chinot
prior to her are called light without a kli. And when this phase four receives the light, it is a state called the world of Ein Sof, and also filling the whole of reality. Question, if we are dealing with spirituality, where there is no time and no place, what does filling the whole of reality mean? Answer, let us return to our allegory from the beginning of the explanation. The allegory that he wanted to give his creatures 100 kilograms of pleasure, and therefore he had to create 100 kilograms of deficiency and desire to receive in the creatures, corresponding to the pleasure. And when the 100 kilogram of deficiency receives the 100 kilogram of filling, this is called filling the whole of reality, meaning no deficiency is left unfulfilled. Now we will explain the meaning of the name Malchut of Ein Sof, Malchut of Infinity. This Malchut, which yearns to receive abundance to fill her deficiency, is called receiving in order to receive. This means that she receives in order to satisfy her lack. At a later stage, she put an end to a restriction on using this vessel. But in the initial stage, which we are dealing with, she still did not make that soft, that end and siyum, conclusion, since this state is still called en sof, no end. We learned, at the end, after receiving its abundance, a desire to bestow awakened in Chochmah, fitting the emanator's desire to bestow. Also, once Malchut received the light, it evoked within her a desire to bestow, since this light possesses the power of bestowal. Bina wished to bestow, but did not succeed because in Bina's way, the purpose of creation is missing. And even her subsequent reception of illumination in Zeranpin was not enough, since the Creator's desire is to do good to His creations was in the ambulance, and not in Zeranpin. Hence, how could Malchut achieve equivalence of form and obtain the purpose of creation too? It is said about it that she invented something new. Malchut would receive everything, but unlike Ein Sof, for it was all in order to receive, she would do it in order to bestow. Thus, on the one hand, she would be realizing the purpose of creation, doing good to his creations, since she would be receiving. On the other hand, her aim would be to bestow, which is equivalence of form.
It's
not clear about the discernments that there's something happening at the end of a discernment. There's a state and then there's the end of a state where something changes.
Not clear. You're speaking about some discernment.
Let's say he writes that in Chochmah, at its end, desire is equivalence of form.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that there's a discernment called Chochmah, and then there's its end, where something changes suddenly. Why is there a process inside the discernment?
The phase? There's a process that it absorbs, it feels who and what's it receiving, and from who is it receiving, And with all that information, it starts changing.
How come in phase one, where you have the desire with the fulfillment, where is there a room for this thing to develop even? Because it fills the entire desire.
It fills the entire desire, but I guess that in the desire, there's more information or data than fulfillment. Or on the opposite, in the filling more than the desire.
Meaning the feeling of fulfillment is partial and there's a part of the desire that still did not develop.
Yeah, the deficiency is there, otherwise there wouldn't be a development. Okay, yeah.
About the gift that you return in phase two, where he gives the example of a friend who's given me a gift, I receive the gift and I decide, no, I don't want to be a receiver, I return the gift.
Yeah.
Can you explain that conclusion? It's a little crude or coarse to return the entire gift.
We're speaking about nature. There's nothing rude or not judgment, not mercy. It's two forces of nature that they both come from the source, from Keter, and this is how they're relating one towards the other.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way to make a calculation whereby I'm keeping the part of the gift, I have to return the entire gift and then start the next phase?
It's a response. There's nothing here that someone who has calculations or any, I don't know, ethics. This is how it happens according to the laws of nature. He wants to receive, he receives. He doesn't want, he doesn't.
Now, in the transition from Zeranpin to Malchut, from 3 to 4,
yeah.
It looks like there's a point of inversion from a state where in phase 3 the action is balanced. Okay, I found the formula. I'll receive, but I'm not for myself, I'll receive in mercy, in Hasadim, in order to connect with the giver. There's a certain calculation of the right attitude to the Creator. And then, in the transition to 4, he goes through a point of shattering a certain boundary, and he becomes opposite to the Creator, becomes only a receiver. He loses the chassadim, the mercy.
We still have to learn about this type of development. It's not necessarily like that. Otherwise, phase 4 would have already been a klipa, a shell. And it's not. It receives because this is the Creator's will, pressing on it, that by the development, by His influence, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth phase will receive. And only after it receives and feels that it's receiving, then there's a new development already. Before that, there's no created being. The created being that for the first time feels that it's a created being, that it's a receiver, that is opposite from the Creator, it's specifically phase 4.
Why in phase 3 the Creator pressures the vessel in a way that makes the chassadim disappear? He begins with seemingly receiving in order to bestow, and he applies this pressure more and more, and suddenly in phase 4 there's no more bestowal, only reception.
That's how the desire develops.
Why is he doing it this way? He seemingly pushes the vessel.
He wants the vessel, the desire, to behave, to function in the complete manner. Simple, to receive and enjoy with everything it can enjoy. Without that, there won't be a vessel worthy for this role.
So
why not skip from 2 to 4? Why did we need 3 in the middle?
How could that be without organizing those two influences, chasadim and chokhmah, together? That from this you would have the whole vessel, that one will receive in the other the mercy that can receive the light of chokhmah.
There is already chokhmah and chasadim. In one we receive chokhmah and bet chasadim.
And together.
We can skip to 4. Why do we need 3, this transitional state?
3 is a rampin.
Yes.
So without having one clothing in the other, that this clothing will come from above, right? In like, let's say, a command from the Keter. So there won't be clothing of Chokhmah and Chassadim, only in Zeranpin. Afterwards, in Gemara Tikkun, the end of correction, then the Chokhmah will be complete and Binah will be complete. And they'll both clothe in one another. There'll be a coupling, a whole coupling.
It's like to leave the impression of the end of correction at the beginning of creation?
No, let's say so. Yeah, I need to give it to him or...
The
basic question that awakens, what's the difference between phase 2 and phase 4?
It
says the end of phase 1, phase 2 is born because it feels disparity of form. And phase 4 has the same thing also. When it discovers that it's 100%, you know, in disparity of form. So what's the difference between the end of 2 and 4?
Second phase, in second phase, we're lacking the force of reception in order to implement itself. In the phase 4, it's lacking the force of bestowal in order to implement herself. That's why the whole process that happens afterwards is how we can reach a phase that includes second phase and fourth phase. That happens after all the shatterings, restrictions, shatterings. Okay. So what are you asking about that?
So he writes here, how can Malchut come to equivalence of form and reach the purpose of creation too? And then it says, it is said about it that he invented something new. Malchut would receive everything. And so on and so forth.
So,
in order to bestow.
That it will receive in order to bestow. It will receive from the Creator as if two. Also, all the fulfillment, which is the light of Chokhmah, and also in the form in order to bestow, which is the light of Chassadim. And those two lights will be clothed in one another, and that is called that it is in the complete reception.
He writes in the beginning that the ancient ones attained that his desire was to do good to his created beings, and that's why the order of development begins until it reaches the souls whose root is the soul of Adam HaRishon that extends from the internality of the worlds of Bia.
Yeah.
What is the internality of the worlds of Bia?
The internality of the worlds of Bia is the light that is in the vessel. The light is the internality. The vessel is the externality.
And this is the root for the soul of Adam Rishon?
The soul of Adam Rishon is the light of Ein Sof that fills the vessel.
The soul of Adam HaRishon is a vessel.
also the light. The soul is light and vessel together.
And the light of Ein Sof in the internality of Bia is the light of Ein Sof?
The light of Ein Sof is the internality of all the worlds, yes. What's the question? I don't understand what...
It's not clear. He says here that the root of the soul of Adam HaRishon is the internality of the worlds of Bia.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand. You said the internality of the worlds of Bia is the light of Ein Sof.
Yeah, but there's a development from Ein Sof through restriction, Gargalta, so on, until we see how it's created, how it's made, how it's filled, in this whole process, it comes in order to build a vessel, which is the soul, you could say, or the will to receive, and that it will receive its filling in the right intention to bestow.
And how the light of Ein Sof reaches the world of Bia?
Through all the previous Patsufim.
It has many concealments and restrictions on it.
Specifically from that, it builds a restriction screen, reflected light in each and every degree, and in this way receives in order to bestow, reaches equivalence of form, and then there are no limitations, and receives in order to bestow. More questions? Yeah.
He writes that in order to enjoy, you need to yearn first, and you have to know what to yearn for, and this can be done only after he sees it at least once, and then he needs to make sure that the object of his yearning will not be in him.
Right. How else would he yearn if it's in him already?
So the state that he yearns for something and it's not in him is the state after the restriction?
After the restriction. Yeah.
It says,
Bina besofa.
Bina, at its end, received a kind of drive which stems from the purpose of creation that she must receive.
Yeah.
Since the purpose of creation was not for the creatures to engage in bestowal, what does that mean? That the purpose of creation was not for the creatures to engage in bestowal?
The purpose of creation is to fill the created beings according to their desire.
And what is the greatest fulfillment?
The greatest fulfillment is the light of Chochmah, which created the vessel.
And if the created being will reach the scrutiny and a desire that he wants to resemble the bestower,
so he needs the light of Chassadim too, that it will be as a vessel for the light of Chochmah. And then those two lights will fill the created being.
So when we say that the purpose of creation was not for the created beings to engage in bestowal, what does that mean? As if in the highest...
To create the will to receive in the created being that will be able to receive everything.
For this will to receive to be able to receive everything, he also needs to want to acquire the status of being the bestower by himself.
That he gets on his way of development by knowing the bestower.
So why is it not considered realizing the purpose of creation where he gets to know the bestower and chooses to be like him?
He implements it. The will to receive implements the purpose of creation to its fullness. It reaches the will to receive and then the will to bestow. Connects them both and in this way resembles the Creator in the complete way.
Why? How come the equivalence of form is not defined as the purpose of creation?
I don't understand why you're saying that.
It says, the purpose of creation was not for the creatures to engage in bestowal.
That's to begin with. On the other hand, she also desires equivalence of form, bestowal.
Yeah.
As if there are two things here, not one thing. As if the law of equivalence of form aims at one thing. Just as the light is bestowing, the vessel needs to develop to a state where he also wants to bestow.
Correct.
Then it requires equivalence of form.
Yeah.
But why do they emphasize the fact that it's... Why the equivalence of form is not the top of the top?
It is the top. When the created being reaches the degree of the creator to the creator's qualities, there's nothing higher than that.
So what kind of a sentence is it? The purpose of creation was not for the created beings to engage in bestowal.
To begin with, the creator wanted the world to receive, that will be able to receive all the good from him. But in order for all that good to be accepted in vessels of reception according to equivalence of form, that wasn't his intention to begin with. But the created being himself chose this form of equivalence of form with the creator.
Well, the creator didn't plan it from the beginning.
As if he didn't. Well, what can you do? But it's nice. The creator didn't force the created being to be a bestower. The created being himself. The created being decided that it's going to perform a restriction and only receive in order to bestow. He writes that it's not in the direct way.
הוא כותב שבסוף בחינה א' נכלל שם כוח השפעה ולכן רוצה בהשתוות הצורה, אבל זה לא היה מספיק כי לא עדיין הכרה ורק בבחינה ב'.
It wasn't enough to have equivalence of form at the end of phase 1, because only in phase 2 Bina discovered it was a receiving and wanted to become equal.
Yeah.
So what brings Malchut in the end to recognize it?
That she includes all the previous discernments. That's why she came as the last one that seals them all, and in her can realize, in her reception, the bestowal, the correct form of bestowal.
Can you say that Bina, the Bina in Malchut is what caused her to recognize that she's a receiver and that's what she wanted to bestow?
Malchut eventually performs all the discernments that came before her. She is the sum of all qualities that come before her.
But in Bina, the recognition that she is a receiver, that's what caused her to want to become a bestower.
Yeah.
It's the same process in Malchut or something else that caused her to eventually want to bestow.
Malchut wants to bestow because she absorbed from the qualities before her the quality of bestowal.
Where did she absorb it?
When she receives from them.
And how is that expressed that she wants to bestow?
By performing the restriction and presenting that condition that she wants to receive only for her reception to be in order to bestow, that she will be as the bestower. It's a form of bestowal. I'm willing to receive from the landlord to the, under the condition that it's not counted as a reception, but as bestowing to him.
I don't know if it's the correct question. What made her recognize that she wants to bestow?
The previous discernments.
That's what created in her that desire.
Yeah, like he writes that the landlord presses on her more and more until she sees that in this way, she reaches equivalence.
Zero.
That